Hey there, welcome to The Honest MD. I'm your host, Kelly, from Hey Kelly Ellen. Tune in every week for solo episodes and conversations with leaders in medicine all about navigating pre-med life, medical school, residency, medical careers, and more. But that's not all. We are all about being honest here. I'm going to be sharing the ups and downs of life both inside and outside of medicine. Because we all know that while we love medicine, it is not our whole life, and we are so much more than our careers. So make sure you're ready to learn. Let's dive in. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Honest MD podcast. I'm really excited today because I have Austin here with me, who is currently in PA school, and I'm just going to let him give you all a short intro about who he is.
Hi, everyone. Like Kelly said, I'm Austin. I'm originally from the northwest suburbs of Chicago. Went to high school there, went to a pretty big high school, graduated with like 700 plus kids. Then I went to undergrad at University of Iowa, got my bachelor's degree in biomedical engineering, went on to get my master's in human anatomy at Des Moines University in Des Moines, Iowa, and now I'm currently a PA student at Des Moines University in Des Moines.
Thank you. I did not know that you did biomedical engineering. That's really cool. Actually, I interviewed my cousin who is, she was a biomedical engineer and now she's going to start medical school. And like, I tell her every day, like, I'm so impressed, like, that she like was able to do that and also like apply to like med school. Like the same with you for PA school. Like, that's so cool.
Yeah, it actually helps a lot. There's a lot of areas that cross over that, you know, most people wouldn't really think. So I'm, you know, didn't make the road the easiest for me, but I'm glad I did it.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so I'm like so excited to talk to you because I get asked like so much about deciding between like going to med school and going to PA school. And like, we're going to like go over that like in depth in this episode. And I think that my audience is really going to enjoy like hearing from the perspective of like a PA student, because I can only like give the medical student perspective. But I want to kind of cover your journey from like a typical like pre-PA journey and kind of what you went through, just so that everyone can learn a little bit more about you and maybe they'll have things that they can relate to as well. Okay. So starting with, like when you graduated college and you were, when you graduated high school and you were about to enter college, what, like, take us back to Austin in those days. Like, did you know what you were going to major in? Did you already know you wanted to do something in the medical field? What were you like then?
So I grew up knowing that I wanted to work in the medical field from the age of like five. Like, I used to, when I would go to the pediatrician, you know, that like awkward time in between when the nurse brings you to the room and when the doctor comes in, I would sit outside the room just waiting in the hallway for the doctor because I was just so excited because I loved our pediatrician so much. So I grew up always knowing I wanted to work in medicine. At that point, graduating high school, I actually had the vision of going to medical school, and we'll kind of talk about that later in my journey about like where that flip happened. High school was pretty normal for me. You know, something that you touched on in your first episode that I listened to that I really connected with was I was one of those students in high school who, you know, I'm not proud of it, but didn't have to really try hard to do well in classes. Like, I didn't study that hard. You know, was always in honors and AP classes, like had a high GPA, which kind of changed a little bit once I got to college. But in high school, like having that vision on medicine, I took courses like medical terminology and a CNA course, which is offered as a dual credit with our local community college.
Oh, that's cool.
So that actually was a really awesome skill to have then going into college and for my future career.
Yeah, 1,000%. So it sounds like you're someone who kind of had the interest in medicine, like, right, like, from childhood, basically.
Yeah.
And really, like, even started in high school kind of seeking out medical opportunities. So then when you started college, how did you decide to start majoring in biomedical engineering?
So I applied to different colleges with, you know, various majors. You know, you check a box of what you want to major in when you apply. And some I did like chemistry, some I did biology, just kind of depending on the school, always with the goal of going to medical school. So, you know, I knew that like what I picked was more of a stepping stone than the end game.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember exactly what I had chosen. I don't know if it was like biochemistry, but then I got an email from University of Iowa saying like, hey, like based on, you know, your background and your grades in high school and stuff, like, would you be interested in biomedical engineering? And I did a little bit of research on it, and I was, you know, of the mindset of, you know, I know not everybody gets into medical school. So if this is going to be my career, if I don't become a doctor, what would I want to do? And I decided that biomedical engineering would have been the next best option for me.
Oh yeah, that's really smart. It's like definitely something that you could actually get a job with out of college. Not speaking from experience, because I did not major in medical engineering, but from what I've heard, that's like, it's much easier to find a job versus like me, who I majored in like physiology. It's like the options are like a little bit more limited on like what right. exactly you can like find out of college.
Exactly.
So then you started doing biomedical engineering, and how like was your experience in college, like with your major?
I mean, it was tough. I took actually 5 years to graduate undergrad. I took a break my sophomore year, for financial reasons. I decided I would take a break from school and live in Iowa so that I could get in-state tuition, since I was originally from Illinois. But the overall journey, you know, was tough. Choosing something like biomedical engineering definitely isn't choosing the easy route. So there was a lot of times where I would, you know, be up late at night studying, you know, physics or fluid dynamics. And I would just be like frustrated, like, you know, I'm spending all these nights doing this. I'm struggling in some of these courses, but you know, this test in fluid mechanics isn't going to help me become a doctor. So, you know, it kind of made it a little harder to see the end goal sometimes. And, you know, like I had kind of alluded to earlier, like in high school, I was always one of the top students in my classes and I had a pretty large class size.
Yeah.
Now you're at a big science university with a bunch, everybody else who was also at the top of their classes in high school, competing in a difficult major. And, you know, there was multiple exams where, you know, I didn't pass, or courses that I struggled in. And, you know, it was really more of a test of endurance than it was a test of intelligence, just to persevere through the struggles.
For sure. And I like appreciate you sharing that, because I don't think enough like people talk about kind of like the transition from high school to college. And like, I also felt like very similarly as well. Like I don't know if I would have even made it through like an engineering major. So like kudos to you. But like even just pre-med like life, I just felt like it was just a whole new level of competition and like stress. And you're totally right about it kind of being like a test of like, will you just keep pushing through and like not give up? Because so many people during that time, like they decide to just like completely like switch career paths, like outside of medicine entirely. So, It's definitely super common for that to happen. I think a lot of people who started out like wanting to do like pre-med or pre-PA or pre-dentistry or something like in freshman year, like maybe like half of them weren't the same like by like junior year, you know? Oh, yeah. I don't know if it was similar at your school.
Yeah, I lived in a, so we had like living learning communities in our like dorm system. So basically they didn't exactly sort you by major, but they sorted you by interest. So like everybody in my hallway was, that I lived on freshman year, was either like pre-medicine, pre-dentistry, pre-pharmacy, you know, something in that field. And yeah. Very few of them are still, you know, on that path.
Exactly. So it's similar for sure. So then we kind of talked a little bit about like the academic side of college. Something else that I get asked about, I don't know if you get the same on your social media, is like, what extracurriculars did you do that you enjoyed in college or that maybe you talked a lot about in your PA school application? I'm just interested to hear like some things that you did that stood out to you.
Yeah, so there, I had a couple of, so I worked throughout college. Initially, I worked in they called it the sterile core. So it was basically down by the OR. Like I worked like sorting surgical instruments and then bringing them to the OR as they needed during cases. After a while, I was just ready for something different. So I became a nursing assistant. And that's where my experience from getting my certification in high school really helped, because I was able to just jump right on over to that without additional training.
Yeah.
So I worked as a nursing assistant for 3 years on an internal medicine floor, served on a couple of different like leadership committees for them, like on their wound care committee, you know, alongside with the nurses and things like that on the floor. But then I also had a couple of really cool opportunities brought to me through choosing engineering. So one of them was that as part of our senior project, we had to create a medical device and market it and develop it from prototype through final product. We even, with our device, we even got so far as getting ready to file like an actual provisional patent, which we ended up not doing just for, you know, various reasons of the members in the group. But then we got to present, we got chosen to present our device at the National Design Conference in Minneapolis and compete against like Duke graduate engineering students and students from all over the country who are bringing these medical devices. So that was something that I really talked about a lot in my interviews, and just kind of the process of, you know, developing a medical device, the behind the scenes behind that. Another opportunity I had was research that I did. And now everybody thinks of research as like benchtop research, like, you know, putting fluids in curettes and, you know, centrifuging them and, you know, doing things like that. But mine was through actually engineering, but it was with a group of medical students at University of Iowa who had developed a product. It was basically a camera that could see whether you had applied sunscreen or not. And so we went to local pools and we tested it on individuals and we educated them about the importance of skin protection. And that was my experience with research. You know, it taught me a lot about getting IRB approval and the different regulations that come along with having to do research on human beings, because there's a lot of behind the scenes stuff that is, that if you don't have that experience, you wouldn't really know about. And I talked about that a lot in my interview as well.
Oh yeah, 1000%. I can already tell that you had like probably a million things to like highlight in your application. Like you, it sounds like you did really, like really cool things with the fact that you, like your senior project for your biomedical engineering was even like up for like awards and like competitions, and then your research that you did sounds like just really unique. Like I don't think a lot of people do research, like clinical type of research, at least with humans, I guess, during undergrad. So I'm sure those things helped you stand out from the crowd when it came to applying and stuff like that. So anyone who's listening, like you don't have to like follow the norm of like what you think you have to do for applying to med school or applying to PA school. Like I'm sure you just followed things that were interesting to you or that the opportunities that your major gave you. And I'm sure that's what helped you like shine during interviews for sure.
Yeah, and I think some advice that I would have for anybody that's listening is to follow your interests. You know, if you're sitting there thinking, I need research for my application, or I need, you know, patient care hours for my application, think about what your interests are and just reach out to individuals in the community. Use the fact that you're a student to your advantage. If you email somebody and say, like, I'm an undergrad student and I'm really interested in this, like, people love that. They love when others show interest in what they're doing. And so you can really open a lot of doors for yourself by just reaching out and using the fact that you're a student and putting your foot forward and getting into the door that way.
Oh yeah, definitely agree with that. It's like it can be scary to like put yourself out there, and like the fear of rejection I think stops a lot of people, but like you quickly realize that you're gonna get rejected like a million times, so you might as well just keep trying till you. Medical student struggling with writing a personal statement, having the worst writer's block and don't know where to start? Want to make sure you write a personal statement that stands out? I have great news for you. My own personal statement landed me 8 medical school interviews, and I put all my knowledge into a free training all about how to write a unique medical school personal statement. Head to my website www.heykellyellen.com and click on the words free personal statement training to watch the video today. It's free, so what are you waiting for? Got the yes.
Yep.
Okay, so thanks for sharing about like all your college experience and everything that you did. That's really, really cool. So now I want to talk about like maybe towards the end of college, like when did you kind of decide what you were going to do? Were you going to stick to going to medical school, or were you going to switch to PA school or something else? Like take us through that thought process.
So after undergrad, due to, you know, maybe some struggles doing engineering or for various reasons, I didn't feel like I still wanted to go to medical school, but didn't quite feel ready to apply yet. So I decided that I was going to do what's called a post-bac program. And I had looked into various post-bac programs that are labeled as post-bac programs. But the thing that I didn't like about a lot of those is that in not all of them do you get a degree at the end. So I thought, you know what, why don't I just go and get a master's degree in something related to medicine, and I'll kind of use that as my post-bac. So I, you know, toured different schools, different programs, and landed on doing my master's in human anatomy.
That's cool.
And then I chose Des Moines University. Something I really liked about their program was pretty much for the first year, you take the same curriculum as the medical students. So I took biochemistry with the medical students, anatomy, physiology, microbiology. I took a forensics course with the medical students as well. So I really felt like it was giving me a leg up on that. And then through that program, so one of the things we do is we TA the med students as well in our second year and the PA students for their gross anatomy courses. And I became the president of a club at our school known as Anatomy Ambassadors. And so what Anatomy Ambassadors did was we would give tours of the cadaver lab to high school students, as well as going out to some of the younger kids in the community, like elementary schools, and bringing organs like brains and hearts and lungs to show them and get them excited about anatomy.
Yeah.
And one of the things that they would always ask me is, what kind of advice do you have for us as high school students if we're interested in medicine? And one of the things I would always tell them is to shadow anybody that will let you, whether or not you want to be a doctor or a nurse or a PA, just shadow various professions. And then I was getting ready to apply for medical school, actually. I had registered for the MCAT. I had started studying for the MCAT. And I thought to myself, you know, before I follow through on this, I should probably take some of my own advice and shadow some other professions, because I really hadn't up to that point. So it was kind of like a practice what you preach. So I reached out to our PA program and they put me in contact with someone to shadow. And I shadowed them and I kind of had like an awakening. I remember I was going out of town the weekend after my first shadowing experience, and the entire time in the car, I was just thinking to myself, like, oh my gosh, I thought I wanted to be a doctor, but really being a PA is what I picture myself doing for the rest of my life every day.
That's so cool. I did not know that story, like, about that's how you found out that you wanted to become a PA. And I definitely, like, 1,000% agree with your advice about shadowing too. Like, I, like, for me, it was kind of between, like I similarly was like, I'm going to go to med school. And then I kind of was like, well, maybe I should, like, figure out, like, what else is out there. So I was like, dentists seem to have, like nice lives, and it's kind of like you're still in the medicine kind of realm. And then I shouted a dentist and I was like, never mind. I don't like this. So it can kind of either like sway you away from something, yeah, or it can like show you like this is like exactly like what is meant for you. So what kinds of things like attracted you to the PA career?
So I really liked the aspect that you could do most of everything that a doctor could do. The specific PA I shadowed did general practice pediatrics. So especially in that field, when you're doing like well child visits and checkups and things like that, it brought me back to the times when I was younger and I would sit outside the pediatrician's office waiting for the doctor. And I thought, you know, this PA does what I've grown up my entire life wanting to do. It's just nobody told 5-year-old Austin what a PA was.
Yeah.
And if somebody had, then maybe I would have grown up my entire life wanting to be a PA. And so then I did some more research. And one of the things that really drew me to it was the aspect that you can switch specialties without additional training. So through my anatomy program and doing dissection, I was like, you know, I'm really interested in surgery, but I don't know if I could picture myself doing it for the next 40 years. And even if I go to medical school, there's no guarantee that I would even match into surgery. So I kind of wanted to take the control into my own hands, as well as just, I like the flexibility of it. I didn't necessarily care about the food chain. Like, I didn't care that I would be under a supervising physician. If that's something that you think would really bother you, then, you know, that's definitely a valid reason to not go to PA school. But for me, that just wasn't really an issue. You know, you can still prescribe medications, pretty much all medications. It varies a little state by state. You can be first assist in surgery, which is if you're basically like if you were a surgical resident, that's basically what you would do. So you're not the one calling the shots, but you know, the surgeon might have you doing little side tasks. For example, during a coronary bypass graft, you might be taking charge of harvesting veins out of the legs. And you're just kind of doing your own little solo surgery down there. So I really liked the versatility as well as the independence, and the fact that it was only 2 years instead of four plus a residency definitely played a huge part in that as well. Having already taken 5 years for undergrad, plus another two to do my first master's, I just kind of was a little bit sick of school.
I am already feeling that now as I'm about to, like, I finished med school, but then it's like I still have more training, you know, obviously. So I definitely understand like where you're coming from. And it sounds like you had a very like you had like really good foresight into the future when you were deciding. Like you're like this, you're like, I like surgery, but also like I see the fact like I can look at my life like 40 years from now and like think like, is this what I would really want to do like that long, or will I want to switch to a different specialty by then? And also the fact that, you know, PA school is so much shorter and there's no residency is definitely like an attractive feature about it. And I just feel like the PAs that I've worked with seem like super happy with their careers too, which like definitely shows that like you could be happy in the career too one day.
Yeah, US News last year actually ranked it as the number one healthcare career, based on various things like job satisfaction, salaries, job security. Something else that played a big part in my decision too was, you know, obviously with school only being 2 years, you're not getting that detail that somebody is getting in medical school. You're able to do a lot of the same things clinically, but a lot of that background knowledge you don't necessarily have. And I contemplated whether or not that would bother me in my future life. You know, if you're the kind of person that's just like, oh, I just always want to know more about it, or I want to dive deep and know, you know, every step of this pathway. But then I thought to myself, like, there's nothing stopping you from educating yourself in the future. So there's nothing, you know, if I'm working in a specific field, there's no reason I can't, you know, be researching things on up to date or on the internet or in textbooks to still gain that knowledge. It's just not a formal knowledge that I'm getting tested on and getting a degree on, but I can still, you know, expand my own personal knowledge.
Definitely. I think like whatever career in medicine you pick, like you have to be a lifelong learner. So definitely even like PA or even doctor or dentist or anything, you have to continue to educate yourself. And especially if you decide to do PA like route, then you kind of have to have your own like agency to kind of like take action and like dive deeper into the subject, which it sounds like you thought about and you know that you could do if you wanted to.
Yep.
So moving on, so thanks for explaining the process between kind of how you decided that you wanted to be a PA. So something that I actually am not familiar with, and hopefully you could educate me and as well as people listening, is what the application cycle is like for being a PA. Like what tests do you have to take for it? How many letters of rec do you need? Like, how long is it? Stuff like that, because I honestly have no idea.
Yeah, so it's a little bit different than applying to medical school. The application opens around now, which is like I think the end of April, is when the application portal, which is called CASPA, opens. And most schools right now take the GRE as the admissions test. I did not have to retake the GRE because I took the GRE prior to getting to my anatomy program, so I used that same score. Some schools are switching over to what's called the PA CAT, which I, to be honest, don't know very much about because it wasn't really that big of a thing when I was applying, and none of the schools I even considered required it. There are also a lot of schools that will accept the MCAT as an admissions test. I tend to, when people ask me about it, I tend to shy people away from taking the MCAT if they think they want to go to PA school. One, because as you know, it is no joke and is quite the daunting task, and the GRE is a little lighter. But also, if you take the perspective of an admissions committee, if this person took the admissions test to go to medical school, then, the admissions committee is trying to figure out, like, okay, why are they now applying to PA school? They want to see someone who's devoted to PA. Even if you did apply to medical school previously, which, a lot of my classmates had, that is definitely a route to PA, just not the only route. You want to show them that you're all in on being a PA. So, the GRE, the MCAT is an option. The PA CAT is becoming bigger. Another test I had to take was called CASPER, which is like an ethics test. So they kind of like give you a video and then you have to type how you would respond. As far as letters of recommendation, most schools I applied to required three letters of recommendation. They really liked one to be from a PA. I actually didn't have any of my letters of recommendation from a PA just because I didn't feel like I knew any well enough to ask them for a letter of recommendation, which wasn't an issue with the schools that I applied to, but it is something that can be an issue for some. And then there was a personal statement, which is 5,000 characters. And then another huge part about the application that differs from applying to medical school is the requirement of patient care hours or healthcare hours. So you really have to have a minimum of so many hours to apply to certain schools working directly with patients. So for me, that came from being a nursing assistant. I had about 3,500 hours. I found that to be about average for the schools that I was applying to. Really, anything under 2,000 will probably be a red flag for admissions committees, but not necessarily. Every student is an individual, and just because you have less than 2,000 doesn't mean you won't get in or shouldn't apply, but that's kind of the benchmark that I've seen. And then, yeah, I think that's most of it. And then you put all that into the portal, pay your application fees, and start the grueling waiting game.
Yeah, it sounds like actually there are a lot of similarities. I made $20,000 my first year as a part-time influencer and full-time medical student. I honestly had no idea how lucrative a career in influencing could be until I started. If you have dreams of having a side hustle as an influencer, you should check out my ebook, The Part-Time Influencer. We cover how to start an account, how to grow a following, and most importantly, how to work with brands and make money. Head to www.heykellyellen.com and click on the Part-Time Influencer ebook in the top banner. I'm so excited for you to get started. Like, I didn't know that PA schools also, some of them like have the CASPER exam. That's something that med schools maybe picked up from PA schools. I'm not sure, but some of them require you to take that. I remember taking that when I applied to med school for a few of the schools. And it sounds like the letters of rec are like similar, obviously. Like for PA school, they might recommend a letter from a PA, obviously, right. And that might be different. But something that that I kind of geek out over is the personal statement, just because I have a course about it and like help lots of students with that. I'm curious if you could tell people advice for how you approached writing it, or maybe like what you focused on in it, because a lot of students struggle with that.
Yeah. So you also have to remember, I was applying to PA school through the start of COVID. So I have a lot of time at home sitting in front of my computer. One of the biggest things that I tell people when they ask me about their personal statement is to not get too attached to your personal statement. I wrote my first draft and I was like, all right, this is a rockin' personal statement. Like, this is great. Like, this is gonna impress all of the admissions committees and get me into PA school. And then I decided I was going to have a couple of people edit it, just because it's always a good idea to have somebody lay another set of eyes on your personal statement. So I had some friends who were already in PA school, so I had them look at it, as well as I had some other friends who were really good with grammar and English look at it. So I had my friends who are good with grammar and English look at it for, you know, obviously those things. And then I had my friends in PA school look at it for content. Just like, was I saying the right things? And I remember after the first person reviewed it, they basically tore it apart and was like, you have to rewrite this whole thing. Like, there's a couple parts that you can use, but really we need to like start from scratch. And I was just like devastated, because I thought that this was the one. But I rewrote it. I actually ended up rewriting it, I think, 3 or 4 times. And, you know, through that process, I was listening to various podcasts, probably like what this one is for some students, of like tips and tricks and things like that of what to include, what not to include, before I settled on my final draft. So it really was an iterative process. And one of the main prompt for the PA personal statement, I don't know if it's the same for medical school, is basically, why do you want to be a PA? And one of the mistakes I was making in my initial drafts was that I was basically rehashing my entire resume. But they already have access to that. You've already submitted what job you worked at, what your major was. So I alluded to those things, but I really spent more time talking about how, kind of like we're talking about now, like how those things all came together at a certain point to lead me to deciding to become a PA, instead of, you know, focusing on, you know, just the fact that I was a nursing assistant, or that I grew up always wanting to work in medicine, you know. They love to hear that, but so did everybody else who's applying. So I don't know if those are kind of similar tips that you would give, but that's how I approached it.
Oh, without, like, definitely. It's funny that, like, when at the beginning when you were talking about how like, you wrote a draft and you were like, this is it, like, this is going to get me in. And then you had to write, like, many more drafts after that. Because I, like, that's the experience of, I would say, 99% of people when they're trying to write a personal statement for a medical or PA school, because you have never written one before, so you just don't know how to phrase it. Like, the one that you write to get into college is very different than the one that you write to get to medical school or PA school, so it's going to take a lot of drafts and practice, and I'm glad that you talked about kind of like the fact that you had to have other people edit it for you, like who have gone to PA school or are currently in PA school, so they kind of know what to look for, as well as the fact of like, don't resume dump, because that's a big mistake that I see a lot of students make too. So it sounds like, you know, people listening are probably going to relate to a lot of the things, whether it's with PA or med school. It's like very similar, 1,000%. Okay, so like we kind of covered some of the basics of applying to PA school and all of that. So you applied, you got your app in. Walk us through how there are interviews for PA school. Correct.
Yep.
Okay. I was just about to like ask you about them, and I was like, wait, because I know for law school, like my friend went to law school and they don't have interviews. So
Oh, really?
Why I like hesitated for a second and I wanted to make sure. How did interviews go? And how did you prepare for them? Stuff like that.
So I prepared, there was a couple of books that I used to, so I actually only ended up interviewing at one school because the first school I got an interview at, I even got accepted to before I had even heard back from a lot of other schools, yes or no.
Mm. Yeah.
And it was my top choice because it was the school that I was already going to. I used various books. I can't think of the names of them off the top of my head because I've since given them away to others to use.
Yeah, it's okay.
But I had prepared for, you know, the traditional interview questions, like what are your strengths? What are your weaknesses? Like, you know, things like that. And there was some of that. So our interview was in two parts. So there was like a video interview where they posted video questions and then you got 60 seconds to respond in one take and then you submitted them. That was kind of something that they developed because of COVID because they weren't doing in-person interviews. And then there was a group Zoom interview. And again, I was prepared for the strengths, the weaknesses, and it was nothing like that. And I just remember when I like started the interview, it wasn't even like anything that I had researched as a possibility. Basically, they gave us a medical case and then we had to talk about how we would approach it. Hmm. But it wasn't like individual, like it was just like they gave it to us and then, you know, you have to decide, are you going to be the first person to speak up and say your answer? Are you going to, you know, is somebody else going to say what you wanted to say? And they threw in some ethics in there too. Like you're working with somebody else who's late and doesn't do a thorough exam and, you know, they miss something that you saw, like how do you approach them? Things like that. So you just kind of had to think on your feet. And I think that's another good tip for interviews is it's important to practice to know, you know, to be comfortable with your answers, but don't be so married to them that if anything else gets asked that you're going to freeze up and not know what to do. And admissions committees also have seen so many interviews and have been through so many that they can tell when you're just kind of rehearsing from a, or stating from a script that you have in your head. So I kind of would recommend just creating bullet points in your head or like an outline of if I get asked about this, like this is kind of the points I want to touch on. And I found at least for me that kind of helped create a more natural flow to my answers when I did get some of those more standard questions.
Yeah, that's really good advice. That is so wild that you had like a kind of a group interview scenario.
The power's flickering here, so
oh no,
if we cut out, that's why.
Okay, well we're almost done. Tell everyone what's happening there.
There's just like a big storm. You know, I'm living in Iowa, so there's tornadoes and storms and stuff all the time, and plenty of fields around for them to pick up speed on. So there's currently one going on outside, so that's what's going on.
Oh my gosh. See, we're live action right now in the eye of the storm. Talking about the group interview, like that's stressful, especially like if you it's like hard to practice that scenario for sure. And it's definitely just to see like how you work under stress and like with other people, because like you have to do that every single day as a PA. So thank you for sharing about that. Okay, I want to just make sure we touch on like what PA school has actually been like, hopefully before your power maybe goes out. So tell everyone a little bit about the transition to PA school and if anyone is like maybe about to enter PA school like soon, what advice you have for them?
My biggest advice is to kind of stay calm through it. It's impossible when you're in it, but that's my advice, after the fact. It is a step up in difficulty. It is hard, but really it's a game of volume. So it's not so much that all of the tiniest details are, you have to know every single detail, which is what I experienced in my first year in the anatomy program when I did take courses with the medical students. It was a lot of remembering biochemical pathways and things like that. PA school is more like we're gonna throw everything at you at once. So I had had experience taking anatomy with the medical students and stuff, and in PA school we took the 16-week med school anatomy course in, I think, 6 or 8 weeks. And having been through that, I can confidently say they did cut out some details for time, but I always say that we pretty much did 75% of the content in 50% of the time. So it's definitely a volume game. I did pretty well through my first semester of PA school. And then the fall semester hit, and that's where things like pharmacology start coming in, things that are a little bit more detail oriented, and the level kind of ramps up. The nice thing about PA school is that it's pretty much always structured where the first half is didactic, so you're in class doing, what you think of as school tests, things like that, and the second year. Or third year, depending. Some programs are 3 years. The second part of it is clinical. So there's always that light at the end of the tunnel. Clinical is just a year away at the most.
Yeah, exactly. I think your advice is really good for anyone who may be going to PA school soon. And also that is wild that they like put that much of your anatomy in that short of time. Kudos to you for getting through that. That sounds really wild.
Yeah, the other adjustment to make from undergrad, undergrad, especially being at a big university like University of Iowa, I would take physics and chemistry in courses with like 200 kids. So I remember one time I struggled on an organic chemistry exam, and I went to the professor and I was like, I studied really hard for this. Like I just, I'm not saying my grade wasn't fair, but I'm like, I don't know what else to do. And the professor was just like, well, some people have to study harder than others to do well. And then he like went back to what he was doing. And so that kind of stuck with me. It's a little more cutthroat in undergrad. Once you get to grad school, PA school, med school, the professors really are there to make sure you're a good clinician and to teach you the material. They're not trying to trick you. They're not trying to, they make the tests hard and they will ask about details, but they're not just trying to like see if you were paying attention. They ask about things that they know that you'll see in the clinic and in real life, and they're willing to put in the extra time to help you, at least from my experience.
That's awesome that you had that you have such a good experience of support. I think similarly at my school, like when they started, they were like, we want every single one of you to be like a doctor one day and like we're gonna support you. It doesn't mean that it's gonna be like a walk in the park, obviously not, but I think like you said, they want you to be a good PA one day, so like they're
Right.
responsible for you to get to that point. Okay, we talked about so much. It was like amazing. Thank you for all of your advice. Please tell everyone where they can find you on social media and where they can contact you because I know people are going to have questions or want your advice one-on-one.
Yeah, so you can find me on Instagram. My handle is at iowa.pa. And I like to post about anatomy content because I really am passionate about that, as well as tips and tricks for applying to PA school, what I'm going through in PA school, kind of a transparent window into my journey. If you have any questions, feel free to shoot me a message on Instagram. I'm pretty much addicted to my phone, so I will always see all of the messages. So yeah, and I'm always willing to help out in any way that I can.
That's so awesome. Thank you for sharing that with anyone who's listening, especially people who I'm sure kind of maybe had the same struggles that you had where they're trying to decide, like, do I do pre-med? Do I do pre-PA? Like, what should I do? And honestly, like, don't ask me about what being a PA is like, because I don't know. Like, ask someone who has gone to PA school and walk the same path that you hope to walk one day. And Austin is amazing. Like, he'll help you out for sure. So thank you so, so much for coming on the podcast today. I really appreciate it. And I hope you have a good rest of your day.
Thank you, Kelly. Hopefully our power stays on. So we'll
I know,
see.
Right?
I'll let you know if I make it through the storm.
Okay. Sounds good. Bye.
All right. Bye.
And now for my favorite part of the episode, where I sit down with my boyfriend, Jarrett, and we talk about topics that you want us to cover as a couple in medicine. Okay, we have so much to update everyone on.
Yes, it's
since been the last time.
Very hectic few weeks
we
here.
We recorded.
Yeah, it's been at least, what, 2 weeks?
I think so. Yeah. So if you don't know, we have been recording these episodes about a month out or so from when they're going to be released.
Mm-hmm.
Just because
helps me stay on top of it.
Yeah. We want to
there's a lot
make sure
going on.
We're staying
in
on
our
top
lives,
of it. And
so.
Also we're going to be gone for 2 weeks in Europe.
Vacation
in May. So we're obviously not going to be able to record while we're there.
No.
So we wanted to have a schedule already kind of planned out. So lots has happened since
yeah.
we last recorded together.
We put an offer on a house. It got accepted.
We were very excited.
We were very excited. Past tense. Then came inspection period, and it was being sold through Open Door, which I don't know if people are familiar with that, but it's a new kind of app and company that, you know, buys your house from you without like looking at it and then tries to sell it and flip it for more, you know.
Yeah.
Big business.
It's like a third party company.
Yeah. They make them seem so friendly and not quite what our experience was with them. So
basically once you put in an offer on a house and then it gets accepted, then you enter escrow.
Yep, and then you
which
get...
Which is what we have been in the past couple weeks.
Yep, then you've got usually about a 10-day inspection period where you get, you know, a home inspector to come in, tell you everything that's wrong, and you get, you know, whatever other ones that are either required by the state or that you want to pay for yourself. So, you know, we got a roof inspection, we got termite inspection, and we got a mold inspector.
We got
the HVAC
like
inspector,
the
which is air
conditioning.
We got a sewer scope inspector. So we did it all. Yeah, I said mold already. But we did the mold after. Like, mold is something that's not always done, especially in Arizona, you know, where
yeah.
it's so hot and arid and, you know, not a hospitable place for mold. But we found it. So basically, we get all these inspections and not a single one came back with good news.
The sewer did.
Oh yeah, sewer did. But
sewer was great.
That's one.
That
yeah.
was our one.
HVAC came back. Heating and cooling is not working. And they're like
in Arizona.
Yeah, in Arizona. So that's a big one. And the unit is 8 years old and sits on top of the house, and it's got a heat condensing pump in it that's constantly going in the Arizona sun. So it's definitely near the end of its life cycle. The termites found, oh, there's active termites in the garage. And then we noticed that there was some water damage on the ceiling of the garage. And when we looked back behind it a little bit, there was mold everywhere. So a ton of mold everywhere. The estimate was at least $3,500. None of the windows are sealed in this house, and they're very old and cheap. And we got an estimate on that, and that was another $27,000 to fix. Mm-hmm. They had polybutylene pipes in the walls, which basically were really cheap pipes they used in the 90s in Arizona, and they're very much known to burst. So no housing insurance company will cover any damages caused by polybutylene pipes. Got an estimate to fix another $20,000 for that. Grout all had issues, and so we got estimates on everything. It was $60,000 plus of issues.
$60,000 of issues, and like some issues that needed to immediately be fixed. Like, we can't live in a house with no air conditioning in July in Arizona.
Yeah. So
like,
and the mold appeared black, so you don't want to be around that.
Yeah. So it was just a lot of problems that we discovered. And keep in mind, like, this wasn't like going to be like our forever home or like,
no, it's 4 years, you know,
home that we wanted to live in during residency. And
hope that, you know, we knew that if we were going to buy a house and only have it for 4 years, we're going to lose money on it. But, you know, we're going to lose money renting an apartment too. So
yeah,
we thought if we can be more comfortable and learn through this process and, you know, maybe end up losing a little bit less than what we'd lose on an apartment, then we could make it work. But you take all your inspections and you put them into this Binzer report and you send them on to the seller, mm-hmm. and they're supposed to like come back. And, you know, our realtor made it sound like she talked with Open Door that sounds like, oh, they fix things and they give you money back. And they didn't offer enough money to fix one single item, even the mold, which was like a couple thousand dollars, like $4,000 or something. Not even enough to fix the mold. They're like, nope, we're not fixing anything. We're not going to give you anything. And we came back with another offer, you know, putting a finite, like, sum on it, not even asking for half of what the issues were.
And yeah.
Nothing. So, again, I recommend don't work with Open Door. I'm a little bitter about it. But, you know, they are just a big company out to make a quick buck. They buy the house, they waive all the inspections, and they wait for somebody to come in and make an offer, like me. And then I pay for all the inspections, find everything that's wrong with this house, which honestly, they probably even overpaid for it with everything that's wrong. And then once you pay for all the inspections, they know everything's wrong with it, they do nothing about it, they cancel your contract, and then they wait for some other sucker to come and buy it for more than they paid with all the issues.
Can you tell this is like Jared's therapy session?
Oh, yeah, I'm getting it all out. I'm taking it here. And they're called Open Door because the door is broken. The door won't shut. There's no hinges. There's no bolts. Somebody took the lock, ran away with it. And they're like, ah, that's your problem. So, boo Open Door. I don't like them.
Yeah.
So, in the meantime, we've done some apartment hunting as well, just as a backup, and found a very nice place.
We found a very nice, like, luxury apartment, which, like,
we can afford since we'll be moving in together for the first time.
Yeah, and also, like, the place, like, has low cost of living where we're going to go, so.
Lower, yeah.
Lower. well, pretty low.
Yeah.
Compared to, like, any other place that I could have gone, like.
Yeah, all out of all the places that you were on your list, you know.
This, yeah.
We'll make it affordable and, you know.
So.
Gotta have a pool if you're in Arizona, right?
We found an apartment that has, like, like resort style pool, and it is like heated for the cold months here, and it has a movie theater.
Cold in quotation marks.
Well, like 60 degrees, you know, it's too chilly to get in.
And so yeah, I'm excited about it. I'm just also happy to be done with this whole inspection escrow thing because it's the most adulting I've had to do in my life. It's been a lot, and it's not looking forward to doing it again in 4 years, but at least, you know, silver lining is we learned how the whole process works. We learned about, you know, the physician loan, which, you know, is fantastic. Take advantage of that if you can.
I mean, that's something that we haven't really talked about, but it's something that our realtor kind of pointed us to.
Yeah, and basically, if you're going into your residency, you can use it as well, even if you're not a full-fledged physician yet, but...
Well, you're a full physician.
Yeah, you're, yeah.
But you're not, like...
A resident physician. You don't,
you're not, like, a board-certified physician.
You're not making physician money, but you can still get the same perks as if you were.
Yeah.
So the loan essentially makes it so you get a fixed rate that's also lower than whatever the standard going rates for mortgages are, and they give you options of, like, they have a five-year one where it locks the rate in at a lower percentage for 5 years, and then it becomes adjustable, or 7 years, or 30 years. And each time you go up in years, you know, the fixed rate, you know, goes up in percentage. So if you're just there for 4 years for your, like, residency, and you know you're going to move, that five-year low, like, locked-in rate for your interest rate, it could be useful, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But another positive about it is you also don't have to put any money down at all on your house, and there's still no insurance on the mortgage insurance.
Yeah, that you have.
Usually you have to put like 20% down on a house to get rid of that mortgage insurance, which is usually $75 plus a month, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it does save you money there as well. So and they let you lend like up to loan up to $3.5 million. So.
Yeah, no, we weren't doing
that. We weren't looking
that.
Anywhere.
We weren't not. Doing $3.5 million, I can guarantee you that. But that's like the maximum, at least maybe for someone going into residency. I'm not sure, honestly.
I don't know, look that up.
But
it's a good tool.
It's definitely something that we learned a lot about and like the process. And I think that also the people at the bank, like, this is like what they do. Like, they work with physicians and give them this loan, so they're very familiar with the process. And it's just something that's worth checking out if you are going to be a resident or an attending in the future. But obviously it also depends on where you're moving to, like if there's homes that are within budget.
And a lot of places, a lot of sites too, especially if you're going solo into your residency, say like, don't buy a house. And I kind of get that, you know.
Yeah.
It's so much more goes into buying and owning a house than you can even imagine.
Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think I would have been looking at buying a house if I wasn't doing it with Jarrett, because I don't have the time to take care of a house. Like, Jarrett would have had to do all of that.
Woohoo!
And obviously I don't have like extra money to like put towards fixing like huge problems.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, if you're buying a place outright that, you know, get the inspections and there's nothing wrong with it, then that we would have had a house if there was less wrong with it, or if Opendoor was willing to concede a few of the issues, you know. But
yeah, and like we would have kept looking, but honestly with what
you're
happened is we kind of ran out of time.
We knew we had like 2 months to do this, but once
yeah.
you, and we made offers on other places, but they mm-hmm. always got snatched up for $50,000 over asking price in cash.
Yeah.
So we finally got one on the hook, but it turns out to be,
it just had,
know,
too many problems
boot.
That we don't want to like pour our money into, and then we're going to be leaving after 4 years anyways. So
hopefully.
Well, we'll see what happens, but
I'd like
at least
to live.
Residency
yes.
will end. After 4 years.
Yes.
Guaranteed. So.
Unless you decide to, like, do child psych, in which case then you do 3 years there and then 2 years at another location. So then your residency
yeah.
doesn't have to be 4 years.
Then it'll be 5 years.
And with this
year.
Whole situation, I've just learned that it just, whatever plans you have, it just, it's not going to work out that way. Life is just going to keep throwing curveballs at you, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it keeps things fresh.
It does. I mean, if anything about life in medicine has taught me is that it's very hard to plan.
Yes.
Anything, like most things, like
we've planned
school.
This vacation, and that's the only thing that like.
Because I'm graduated,
yeah.
and I haven't started work yet, so that's why mm-hmm. we can plan it.
Well, yeah, but if we were gonna end up getting this house, even with the issues, it might have affected it because like. We ought to get somebody in there to fix the air conditioning, you know, if we were going to get this place. And, like, you never know, like, when they're going to be able to get the unit out there. You're going to have somebody there to let them in the house, you know. If we're
yeah.
gone for 2 weeks, it would have been an issue, to say the least.
Yeah. But we're still very excited about the apartment. And
yes.
I you know, if you have any recommendations for cute decor or furniture or
on the cheap end.
Obviously, I can't afford like a $5,000 couch, but you know, budget friendly but cute. Send them our way.
Yes, please.
So that.
And if you see open door, go the other way.
Okay, let's. Honestly, we're just sharing what happened and like our experience because yeah. We.
Let me save you the pain. We went of open door.
A lot of pain.
Close the door, please.
Jared's really onto the door joke here.
Well,
you can't tell.
Dad jokes are my specialty.
I know, they are your specialty. And maybe they should be postponed to the future. You have kids?
No, it just seems like, why wait, you know? This is just good practice. I'll get in, you know, I'll be number one dad joke when I become a dad, you know?
That's your goal?
Why not?
Just to be number one dad joke?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's...
I can embarrass my kids around every corner, every situation calls for a dad joke.
I pray for them. So that's our update on where we're going to be living.
Yeah.
Hopefully in the future. And basically on the docket is graduation.
Yep. That's about a week away.
About a week away, which is very exciting. Cannot believe
it is exciting, but it's also like, you know, the truth about being a resident is like,
yeah,
you're not that excited, honestly. You feel like you should be more excited about graduation. You know, residency is very intimidating. You know, you go through 4 years of medical school where nobody respects you or your time, and you're told to go around and do everything. You have no autonomy. And then you finally graduate, and you're going to be making, you know, adult money with a real job, and that autonomy still isn't there, you know?
Yeah. I mean, like, I'm excited for, like, the day of graduation, like, but also there's the fear of like starting residency, which I think anyone who's starting residency has that fear. Like, I don't think I'm like the only person in the world who's like fearful of starting residency, not only because of what Jarrett said, but also like the fact that now I'm going to have to start to make doctor's decisions and be responsible for my patients, and like I'll have like a supervisor, obviously, but it's just different than being a student. Like, I'm not going to be a student anymore, you know?
Yeah, it's a big change.
Yeah, so obviously I'm very like nervous about that, but I was nervous like before I started med school too, and I think it's just like nerves when you're starting.
Yeah, it's a big chapter. It's a big change, and you know,
yeah,
normal feelings, but it's exciting. Graduation in a week. You got family coming to come see you and friends.
Yeah, I'm excited for that. And
then we're 2 weeks out from our vacation. Thank God.
I know, I'm so ready for a vacation.
Yeah.
Jarrett is going to Italy for the first time.
Very excited. I've been wanting to go since my European history class in high school, my favorite teacher.
Yeah.
Learned a lot about Roman history, so.
Yeah, so we have
very excited
a week in Italy planned out, and then we are doing like
Greek
Isle cruise
kind of thing,
plus other countries.
Yeah, so it just every single day is a different stop at a new island or coastal European city. So
it'll be fun. Excited.
Yeah, it's much needed after 4 years of medical school and 1 month of dealing with open door.
Honestly, very true. It's just been a long road of med school, but also just like doing med school with also trying to do this house stuff has been really stressful.
Hunting for a house while you're in your last clinic and you're like preparing for graduation, and it's so much to deal with. So
yeah, and I've also been doing my course, like editing personal statements, doing Zooms, like pretty much every day with people. So it's like, I feel like sometimes I'm balancing like three different jobs at once.
Yeah, it's a lot.
And then I was like, I don't have enough on my plate, so let's start a podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll put a little bit of that on Jared's plate. When residency starts, I might have to start taking over some of your Instagram stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You'll have to do a takeover because I'm obviously going to be more
busy.
You work
6 days a week.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, we will. I can't make a guess as to what's going to happen. Because every time I try to predict the future, the exact opposite happens. So.
That's true. Well, at least we know we have vacation and we have a place to live and we know that I'll be starting residency in the summer. So that's all we can count on for now.
Yeah, you can count on each other.
Yeah. We'll end it on that happy note.
Yes, that's good.
And we can count on each other.
There you go. Now what can't you count on? Open door.
All right, that's going to be the end.
Do open door. No open door.
Thank you so much for tuning into the Honest MD podcast. If you enjoyed this episode or learned something new, I want to tell you about three ways you can support the show and keep the Honest MD going. Number one, subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode. You literally just have to hit the subscribe button. It's that easy. Number two, take a screenshot of this episode on your phone, sharing what you loved about the episode, and post it to your Instagram stories and tag me at Hey Kelly Ellen. And lastly, number three, leave a review. This is the ultimate way to support the Honest MD. You can write something short and sweet like, I love this show, or something longer about things you have learned or appreciated about this podcast. I am not kidding when I say that I read every review and it means so much to me. The more reviews we have means the higher we rank on the podcast algorithm, which means bigger and better guests and episodes. Thanks so much for listening and see you next week.